One of the strategies that has best served the far right in this country is bringing together conservative Americans from different backgrounds around one passion-inspiring issue. While they would never use the word intersectionality, it's exactly what has been happening. And now, as a new strain of international coalition building on the far right surges, it is newly urgent to both observe that movement and recognize historical precedents for it. Precedents that, sadly, almost always include bigotry in general and anti-Semitism in particular. Megan Black is program director at Western States Center, and her work leading the center's Common Good program with a focus on exactly those dangerous trends. Megan, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very excited to be here.
You know, I think it's often difficult to recognize the international nature of what can feel like domestic political trends. You focus on combating anti-Semitism, and a recent trip to Europe was only partially an historical endeavor. Tell us about this trip, if you would.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Folks don't often realize that the battles we're fighting here in the United States to protect democracy and for justice and rights for all are being fought all over the world, and in fact are connected. And we've been working with a group of artists and musicians for several years now. One of our core beliefs is that we have to do really good policy work and we have to do really good electoral work, but we also have to do culture shift work. And so we work with artists and musicians for that reason. And we've invited them into, for the last couple of years, a deep wrestling with the problems of democracy, which is not something that many artists and musicians get to spend a lot of time thinking about. So they got to hang out with us and learn some of the things that we wrestle with every single day and talk with each other about it. And then we realized that, you know, it would be important for us to find time to take this story that we were wrestling with here in the United States and take it abroad and see how it relates to what's going on in other parts of the world. And so we planned a trip to Poland for June of this year, a place where many of them had never been. Most folks don't think to go to Poland for vacation, although it's a lovely country. We planned it before the war in Ukraine started and then kind of monitored carefully to see if we could still go and decided we could. And so we went to this country that felt very different. And I think many of our participants would say in many ways felt very similar to what we're struggling with here in the United States. And we got to encounter some of those things kind of head on, which was fascinating and exciting and I think fruitful.
Was that your first time in Poland?
It was my second time in Poland. Part of why I knew it would be important for us to go is because I'd been before, actually, with Western State Center, and had a real sense of the impact that exploring these issues, especially the issue of anti-Semitism, can have when you go to a place like Poland. Poland used to be one of the safest places in the world for Jews, and many folks left other parts of Europe to go to Poland to find safety, many Jewish people. And then, you know, through the events of World War II and Nazi Germany and the Holocaust, Poland became what's called now the largest Jewish cemetery. And so it's an extraordinary and striking and deeply painful place to look at the issue of anti-Semitism, but it certainly leaves a mark.
So you knew a little bit about what you were going to encounter on this trip. Were you expecting to see what you saw and feel what you felt on this trip?
I was, you know, I wasn't sure what it would look like. We went to Auschwitz, obviously, and took the group there. For most of them, it was their first time. For me, it was my second. And I remember that feeling the first time I went of being really overwhelmed by the shock of it, by the size and the scale and the horror of it. And this time, going back to a place like Auschwitz, already having a sense of what it was, I found that it was in many ways even more painful the second time because I didn't have the buffer of the shock to protect me from the deep pain and grief and horror of that place. And so I found it even more challenging this time around and is not something I would encourage people to do. And yet it was really meaningful. And I will say too, it really put in perspective as someone who has, you know, dedicated my career to protecting our democracy, expanding our democracy, being face to face with the horror of what can go terribly wrong, being face to face with what it looks like when this goes off the rails, when this goes terribly wrong, really reinforced the urgency for the work we're doing here in the United States and the relevance to around the world, to the rest of the world.
And I think there are not a lot of people who understand what it means to be able to say the words, "I walked out of Auschwitz."
Yeah, it's true.
Who was on this trip, and what were some of the lessons that were learned? I mean, I don't know if you want to share names, but you can talk about the kinds of people who were on the trip.
Yeah. So we had a cohort of about 18 artists from all across the country, but mostly from the Pacific Northwest, a very racially diverse group, an ethnically diverse group. Some were Jewish, and for them, this was a very meaningful visit. Some of them were actually Polish descended Jews, and in various stages of relationship to their Judaism. Others were Black or South Asian, and didn't have a sense of how this issue, how anti-Semitism related to them, which I connected with because I am a Black woman as well, and I grew up Christian and am still Christian. And so for me, I remember coming into this and thinking, oh, well, this was a thing, but it's not a thing that I need to worry about anymore. And so our group came in with, So our group also reflected a variety of artistic expressions. Some were, as I said, musicians, some were visual artists, poets, playwrights, all sorts of different expressions. And they came in, frankly, with lots of different expectations of what this would be. I think some were looking for, oh, I've never been to Europe. I'll take a trip to Europe on Western State Center. And others, you know, were anticipating a much more impactful personal experience. I think I can say pretty safely, having done some debrief now with those folks, with all of those folks, that everyone came back feeling personally impacted and feeling deeply connected. And for the Jewish artists and the artists who came from Jewish ancestry, I think there was this sense of really deep, profound personal connection, perhaps even a finding of self, a sense of grief and a desire to find ways to express that grief and also perhaps that joy through their art. For our participants who came from a different background, I think they were surprised by how connected they felt to the Polish people, to the history of Poland, and how relevant it felt to the United States. You know, one of the things that came up for our group, our very racially diverse group, who navigated many challenges, several of them had to navigate some pretty profound challenges getting to this very white, homogenous country, was when they realized that Poland was not a colonial power, that Poland didn't have the colonial history, colonizing history that so many other countries in Europe have, and that it then changed their sense of relationship, I think, to the country, and it was a little bit disorienting. So it was fascinating to see people navigate Poland's particular and very unique history in Europe as people of color.
So we're only a few weeks, as we're having this conversation, past this trip. So I'm not sure you have a good answer to this question yet, but how can what they experience there, what you all experience there, be applied to the urgent work of combating hatred and bigotry?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a really important question. And you're right, we're still sorting that out. But some of the initial things that are coming up. So a couple of our participants got back and they felt this immediate urgency to get into some local community organizing work, this sense of we have to strike now. This issue is so big. I need to do what I, it's so big and it's so local. And I think that's part of what they realized even in Poland, right? Like these things, what we do on the local level has a ripple effect and matters actually all across this country and all across the globe. And so some people got back and they dove right into advocacy work in their communities. Other people we have one artist, for example, who's on an artist residency, an artist retreat right now, And she's germinating her own kind of body of work that is influenced by and inspired by this trip. Wow. Another is seeking to build out a partnership, actually, with some of the people we met in Poland and perhaps do an exchange. Those are some of the immediate responses that people are having. But I think, you know, part of why we do these trips, why it's important for us to invest in taking people to places like Poland, is because we think it creates a sense of deep understanding and a motivation to speak out, to stand up, and to spread the word about the big picture here. And so we're going to be paying attention over the next year or so to see how these artists and other people who go through these programs do that, how they speak up, how they stand up, and how they spread the word.
You know, you mentioned that coming to a place where colonialism is not quite the issue that it is here in the United States was sort of a revelation for some of the people who were there. Why is it important for people of goodwill to recognize that hate, anti-Semitic and otherwise, is not anchored in a particular kind of culture or history?
Yeah, such a good question. You know, one of the things that we run into, even when we don't mean to, is a kind of binary or a very simplistic explanation of what our problems are. That there's a good guy and a bad guy, that there's black and white, that there's, you know, Jew and Christian or what have you. And so we end up slipping into this very simplified idea of what the problem is. And then therefore we slip into really simple answers to how to fix it. And the value of trips like this and of that particular recognition was it really invited our participants into a sense of complexity, into a wrestling with what's the big picture here? And part of what I find fascinating about anti-Semitism and why I think it's so important for us to talk more about it is that anti-Semitism also functions a little bit differently in our system in systems of oppression in this country and in other countries. It doesn't play by the same rules that, for example, racism does, or misogyny or homophobia, things like that. And so it's important that people realize that there are a lot of different ways that these things play out and that they're complex and that they require particular kinds of attention. And what happened when people realized that Poland wasn't a colonial power, and if I can speak frankly, that these white people in Poland had a different history than perhaps the white people who they spend most of their time around in the United States, it forced them to expand their understanding of the issues and the forces that they're really trying to make sense of and navigate. And it forced them to ask deep and hard questions, frankly, about all the things. For me, that was the really fascinating piece of it, was the extent to which we were able to really invite people into complexity, and they loved it. People love being able to see that things are bigger and more connected than they, and then that they can find their way through that. That's a really affirming experience. And so I think it was a really positive one overall.
And you had your own journey to this before this trip. Can you talk about what in your background inspired you to focus on anti-Semitism?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I was raised in a pretty devout Catholic household in the Midwest with some Pentecostal influence. My father's family was a Church of God in Christ, and I would go to church with them when we would visit. And so I grew up really deeply rooted in a Christian community and studied theology all the way through college and even graduate school. I have a Master of Divinity degree and thought I was going to work in the church for a while. And then I decided to instead get into interfaith organizing work. And it was in that work, in my interfaith work, that I met a bunch of rabbis, and over time they introduced me to this issue of anti-Semitism and complexified it for me in ways that I didn't anticipate. And I found myself grateful because it helped me connect the dots on it. It helped me paint a bigger picture like I realized in being in deep relationship with these rabbis and also with some imams and with some Buddhist leaders and leaders of all different faiths, that there's such a big picture here. There's such a complicated and long history. And I was fascinated by it. And frankly, I will say, I was also called to account a little bit. I had to then go back and look at my own tradition and realize, oh, there are ways in which I, as a Catholic, have been perpetuating anti-Semitism, or at least an anti-Jewish bias. And it really helped me bring kind of a fine-tooth comb through my own beliefs and faith tradition. And part of my work now is finding ways to hold Christian communities accountable to the ways in which we are complicit in perpetuating anti-Jewish bias. And so for me, it's been really a journey of self-discovery and of finding ways to be in deeper and broader community with people.
It's fascinating. And I want to come at this from the other side now for just a second. I offered Reva Price's tongue-in-cheek assessment of introducing Hitler into a political disagreement when I introduced you. But very seriously, when is invoking anti-Semitism counterproductive to combating prejudice?
Oh, good question. There are people invoking anti-Semitism all over the place these days. And what I look for when I hear that is who is being protected or served by that invocation. So is the person who's invoking anti-Semitism or the organization, are they doing it in a defensive measure to protect their own interest, especially if they're not a Jewish organization? Are they protecting their own interest or their own people? Or are they truly doing it in a way that is intended to protect the history and autonomy and freedom of Jewish communities in this country and in others? So for me, that is the first place I look to, because what we see now with the invocation of anti-Semitism across the political spectrum is a lot of self-serving uses that actually distract from the real threats that we see coming from white nationalist actors and white nationalist movements, both here and in the United States. And so being really clear about the actual real lived threat to Jews in this country today and historically is really, really important. And that's where I would keep the focus.
That was a great answer. For so long, a dedication to democracy was the hallmark of true American exceptionalism in its best form. Today, it's clear that some who feel their lifelong privilege is under threat would rather sacrifice democracy than their own supremacy. Why is a strong and vibrant democracy the only hope we have going forward?
I love this because, you know, I actually think there's some real wrestling right now with this, especially on the left. People are really wrestling with, you know, democracy has historically, it's a both and. It's been a really, really good thing, but it's also been a really challenging thing, especially for communities of color in this country. And for me, where I have landed on this is that I've come to appreciate the extent to which, because of our diversity, because of how different we all are, it's kind of like that saying, the journey is the destination, right? Like what a democracy offers is the chance for all of us to come to the table and negotiate with each other for our best interests. And absent that, we are in an authoritarian space, right? There is simply the imposition of one person's will over another. What we can look forward to in a robust and thriving and inclusive democracy is a space where everyone has the tools and the ability to negotiate for their own needs in relationship with each other across the table. Everyone gets a seat at the table. Now, whether or not they're going to get all of their, you know, desires and hopes and interests met is a whole other thing, because we have to work that out. But absent that, what we have is authoritarianism. And that means that there's always someone at the bottom. And we know that historically, that means that there are always going to be Black people at the bottom. And for me, that's a non-starter.
Another great answer. Before I let you go, I want to talk a little more generally. Tell us about the Western States Center's efforts to foster democracy and civic engagement, and how our listeners can follow and support that work.
Great. Yeah, Western States Center is an organization based in the Pacific Northwest in Portland, Oregon. We serve the entire country, but with a specific emphasis on Oregon, Idaho, and Washington. And we have been around for decades as a center for community organizing and justice work. We have a history of doing really strong work around reproductive justice, racial justice, and now we're really focused on the threat of white nationalism. And so we operate through four primary pillars. We focus on culture change. As I said, we work with artists and musicians to equip them with the tools that they need to include an analysis and understanding of the threat to democracy in their work and their advocacy. We develop leaders to do the same. We equip movements in our area and across the country to be effective advocates and defenders of democracy. And we ourselves are dedicated to the defense of inclusive democracy. And we have two primary programs. The Momentum Program tracks and monitors white nationalist movements and activities and equips local governments and school boards and leaders, community leaders, with everything that they need to resist the imposition of white nationalist activity in their communities. And then the Common Good Program, the Common Good Program that I lead really focuses on equipping people with an understanding of how anti-Semitism is particularly weaponized by white nationalist movements and anti-democratic movements, and giving them the skills to navigate that that weaponization. So that's where we're primarily focused. We can be found in all the places everyone can be found: Facebook, Instagram, our website, www.westernstatecenter.org. You can follow us there. You can sign up for our newsletter. We send it out regularly with all kinds of updates.
Megan Black is Common Good Program Director at the Western States Center. With deep experience at the intersection of white supremacy, anti-Semitism, and Christian hegemony, Megan recently traveled to Poland to engage with the horrors of the Holocaust in a present-day context. You can learn more about her work at westernstatecenter.org. Megan, thank you very much for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. It was a joy.